Welcome, fellow seekers of the extraordinary. Welcome to our shared quest. A quest not for a thing, but for an idea. A quest not for a place, but into deep, inner, unexplored regions of ourselves. A quest to understand how we can achieve our fullest potential by learning from others who have done or are doing exactly that. Extraordinary stories of overcoming anguish. People who have stood up to challenges with true courage. Stories that will enlighten and inspire. May we always have the courage and wisdom to learn from those who have something to teach. Join me now in seeking the extraordinary.
Hi, welcome back to the Seeking the Extraordinary podcast. I am Brad Levin, and I'll be filling in for our Chief Seeker of the Extraordinary, Michael Nathanson, who has graciously allowed me to take his place as the host of our podcast. Today, I have a very special guest. Her name is Stephanie Wolf. She is the CEO and founder of the Novus Anti-Aging Center. And Stephanie is a board-certified anti-aging specialist, a hormone expert, a peptide expert with the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, a board-certified physician's assistant, and a certified weight loss specialist with the National Academy of Sports Medicine. And if that wasn't enough, she's also the nation's leading sexual wellness expert. Now, I don't know if that's not extraordinary, I don't know what is. She is also the founder of Launch Medical and a co-inventor of a medical device for male sexual health called the Phoenix. She also graduated from Arizona State University in 2000 with her Bachelor of Science in Life Sciences and continued on to Midwestern University, where she obtained her degree as a physician's assistant. Now, I've noticed over the last couple of years, there's been a massive movement in preventative and regenerative medicine, weight loss, especially in the last few months. Everywhere you go, people are talking about anti-aging techniques. Everybody is taking Ozempic or Mounjaro these days. And really, everybody is, I think, sort of seeking the fountain of youth, trying to find innovative ways to improve their overall health and wellness. And Stephanie is really at the forefront of some of those effective treatments that are dramatically improving the quality of her patients' life. So, Stephanie, it's such a wonderful opportunity to get to sit down with you today and talk about some of these great advances that are taking place and the way that you're really impacting our clients' lives and the lives of your patients for the better. I'm just going to go right to the hot button in your bio. Sexual wellness expert. Let's just touch briefly on what that's all about.
Oh, my gosh. Well, when I was 8 years old, no. It's funny because, first of all, thank you for having me on here. This is amazing, and I just feel really gracious to be a part of this.
Yeah, it's our pleasure.
Community and
thank
podcast. It's interesting because I've been wanting to be a doctor, a healthcare provider, since I was 8 years old. Like, okay. I just always knew I wanted to help people, and that was what I was striving for. That was what I wanted to do. And I never really knew there was such a thing as sexual wellness, to be honest with you. I always thought I was going to be a cardiologist.
A little different.
We're going to get there. Maybe not, actually. Okay. And so I took my MCATs, and I was applying to med school, and I actually got pregnant very young. And so I was a mom trying to go to school, and I was actually supporting myself through school and had a job and a mortgage and all those fun things. So it was really difficult, and it was a very difficult decision at that time. And I was working in a lab where I was working with skeletal muscle tissues, and I was working with a cardiologist. And I just said to him, I don't really know what to do, because my whole life I've always planned on being a doctor, and I'm not sure if that's the right path for me, because I'm taking care of my son and I don't really have the family support system. And he said, well, why don't you decide to go to PA school, be a physician assistant? They get to do exactly the same thing as doctors, and you get to help people, and why don't you think about it? And I'd never heard of a physician assistant. So I went home and I read about it and I thought about it. And there was something that he said to me. He said, are you becoming a doctor because you want to be called doctor? Hmm. Is it because of the title? Or are you becoming a doctor because you actually want to help someone?
That's a good question.
He said, I want you to go home and think about that question. Yeah. And that's a real question, because is this actually ego driven or are you passionate? Right. And I came back and I said, I want to help people. I don't really care about the name.
Bottom line.
Yeah, bottom line. So I started PA school and continued on thinking that I was going to do cardiology. Mm. And, you know, as I kind of started going through the whole course, I realized that I wanted to do family practice. I wanted to see just the whole gamut of things. You know, I didn't want to specialize in one thing. I wanted to learn it all. And so I started off in family practice. And what I kind of learned by doing family practice is that you're not really helping people, believe it or not. You have people coming in to see you, and you ask them what they're taking, and they'll pull out this long laundry list of medications.
Yeah.
They can't say what they're on. They don't know why they're taking it, and they don't know when they even started it. Mm. And that, to me, was the moment of we're failing these people because they don't even know what's going on. And what I realized is that these patients, besides these 20 different medications they were on, their blood pressure wasn't controlled, their diabetes wasn't controlled, their cholesterol wasn't controlled, they weren't sleeping, they weren't having sex, like nothing was happening. And
life was just not good, but they were doing what they were told was the right protocol.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just wasn't working. And so that's where I said to myself, well, my path was always to help people, and clearly I'm not helping them if they're not any better. There has to be a different way. And so then that's when I went on the course of hormone therapy and kind of looking at it in a different light. Regenerative medicine, I guess, is a better way of saying it. Yeah. And so I decided, well, you know what? What if I took a step back and I start removing some of these patients off their medications, but really handhold them, like have them come in every single week, write down what they're eating, what their exercise, what their blood sugars are, what their blood pressure is, and let me actually see and help them explain why it's happening. And not everybody wanted to do that because there's people out there that like to take their pill and go about their life. But there's a large proportion of society that actually wants to get better. They want to live a long, healthy life. And it was those people who said, you know what, sign me up for that. I want to do this. And before you know it, I had this, I don't even know, a 3-month waiting list of patients wanting to come see me. And I was actually making a difference. And I went on vacation and I left the patients to the providers in the office. And I said, it's just a week that I'm gone. So just bring in your menus and kind of give them your blood sugar readings. Just let them know what's going on so somebody's watching you. Okay. And when I came back, this is a long answer for the question you asked.
It is. I'm sure we'll get there eventually.
I'm so sorry.
But no, but this is really an interesting foundation of what led you to what you're doing now. So thank you. Let's continue with that.
So I went on vacation and I came back and the provider sat me down and they said, I don't know what you're doing here, but you're not allowed to do that here.
Oh, wow.
And I said, what do you mean? Yeah. What am I doing here? And they said, well, you took everybody off their statins, their metformin, their baby aspirin, their lisinoprils. We just can't do that here. And I said, but they're better without it. So I wouldn't do anything that harms these patients. I care about them as if they're my family.
Yeah.
And there was one doctor in particular said to me, if you fix them, they don't come back.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really telling, isn't it?
Yeah. I went home and I cried that night.
That's really, gosh, a terrible assessment of the medical, I don't know, industrial complex in America is, I think, a good way to put it, is that it's really a business of making sure that people continue on the protocol of taking the pharmaceuticals that they have been instructed to take and that they have to stay on those in order for that business to be sustainable.
Yeah. It really does remind me of a Costco membership.
Yeah.
Once you sign up, like, it's very difficult to get off of it.
Okay.
So I went home, I cried, and I was married at the time, and my husband said to me, well, why don't you just do what you want to do? Why don't you see the patients you want to see? Why don't you just open up your own practice? And of course, I said, and nobody's going to come see me.
Right.
And he was in advertising and marketing. So he said, let me help you. Okay. We'll make sure that the message is clear on what it is that you're trying to achieve with these patients. And so we actually started Novus in our living room. on the weekend.
There's many, many successful major companies that started out the same way.
Yeah.
Okay. Just, so from those auspicious beginnings,
yes.
What happened? How did you grow?
Yeah. So I just started seeing patients of mine from the clinic as well as their referrals and friends' referrals. And they were coming to my house on the weekends to kind of, again, just helping them get better, helping them get off medications, lose weight, feel better, have more energy. And really, that's all it was. It was kind of that in a bubble.
Yeah.
And it got weird because I have kids. So we ended up renting a back house in Toluca Lake. I was referred by another friend. And so I started seeing patients in the afternoons. And then it got weird and busy. And she's like, this is my house. So I think you got to go. And so then we found the brick and mortar, which is where we're at today. And what was interesting is I still did the same thing where the patients came in because they wanted to lose weight, they wanted energy, they wanted to feel better, they wanted off their medications. That's what I did.
Okay.
And what I learned through that is that the men that I were seeing in the very last 2 minutes of our consultation would say, oh, hey, by the way, can I get some Viagra?
Oh, wow.
Okay. And you go, we sat here for an entire hour and you didn't bring that up at all. And I was really upset that they were, first of all, I felt like they were ashamed to talk about it.
Sure.
And it was like the last 2 seconds. And then it was, maybe it's because I'm a female and they're embarrassed that they don't want to talk about it with me. And I was like, this needs to be normal because this is normal life. We all go through this.
Yeah.
So why is this shameful? It shouldn't be. And so I really started making it the first question I asked. Mm-hmm. So when I would sit down in the consultation with these guys, I got detailed with them. I wanted to know all kinds of fun things.
Just embarrass them right off the bat.
That's right. Okay. Let's just go straight for it. And honestly, I really feel like they enjoyed that part of it, that they finally got to talk freely about it without any judgment.
Okay.
And I was listening and I wanted to help them. And so I saw this side of these men that were, it was kind of incredible, actually.
Wow.
And I said to myself, well, if they're coming to me to get off medications and then here I'm just giving them another Band-Aid fix, like
doesn't
I'm not
make sense.
Actually helping them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so again, it was my husband who was listening to a podcast and he came home one day and he said, I think I found our solution because I think we should implement shockwave therapy into our treatment.
Shockwave therapy.
Excuse
for sexual
me?
Health.
What are you talking Woo! About?
Yeah. Okay.
So he said, please listen to the podcast.
All right.
So I listened to the podcast and I remember us talking about it at dinner and I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah, I agree. With you.
And he goes, you know what? I knew you were going to say that, but let's go learn about it. Let's learn about it. You can ask all the questions you want. You can actually see being performed. You could perform it. And so, okay, let me do that.
Okay.
So we ended up flying to Florida and I did a whole weekend with some doctors and learned all about it and, you know, brought it back to the office. And, you know, just to kind of, I want to give a little bit of background of shockwave therapy for a second.
Please
but
do. Yeah.
Shockwave therapy has been around since World War II, believe it or not. So there were these depth charges that were released to these submarines to try to attack submarines.
Yeah.
And what they found is that these depth charges released this high-intensity sound wave, which didn't destroy the submarine, but destroyed the internal organs of the seamen on board.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they brought them to the hospital, and they were like, I don't get what happened.
Yeah.
And they discovered it was this high-intensity sound wave that was being emitted. So then years later, I think it was in the 60s, that's when they finally harnessed this energy and used it for lithotripsy. Lithotripsy is what we use today in the ER setting if you have kidney stones.
Okay.
So if you have kidney stones, you go to the ER and you can't pass it, they're going to use high-intensity sound waves to break it up. It's destruction of tissue.
Okay.
What they found is that the tissue around that gets low intensity, and this low intensity triggers a release in the brain that says, I need you to repair this tissue. Mm. And so it sends all these growth factors and stem cells to help repair the tissue. And what I always tell my patients is anytime you're repairing tissue, there is a bundle that comes with that tissue, and it's arteries, veins, and nerves. So anytime you create new tissue, you're creating new arteries, new veins, and new nerves. So sensation and blood flow to feed the tissue. So that makes sense to me. right? So when they said, okay, well, we're going to administer low intensity sound wave on the penis, I thought, oh, well, that makes sense because we're going to restore the tissue.
Okay.
And what's funny is the very first patient that we had at Novus to undergo this shockwave therapy, he's still a patient to this day.
Now, did he know he was the very first patient?
He does now.
Okay. I'm sure you didn't tell him right off the bat.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. Uh-huh. But yeah, I've learned so much going through all of it. And so now to me, I'm actually in the process of writing a book. I've been writing this book for 4 years, so hopefully it'll get done soon.
You're busy.
I'm very busy. Yeah. But what I've kind of realized is that if you actually think about why men have erectile dysfunction or sexual performance issues, it's threefold. The first one is cardiovascular,
okay,
which is goes back to the whole when I was 8 years old, I wanted to be a cardiologist.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, we all start building plaque even as a young age. Like it starts at 5 years old.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And really all plaque is just inflammation within the arteries.
Okay.
Why do you get inflammation? Diet, stress,
yep,
alcohol, drugs, medications, illness, autoimmune disorders,
poor
whatever
sleep.
The case. Poor sleep,
yeah,
whatever the case may be. And so it's always accumulating,
okay,
right? Because your body's repairing.
Yeah.
We're always in this state of repair,
yep,
right? So when you're in this state of repair, does the body know how to repair it correctly or not? That's the biggest question. And if it doesn't know how to repair it correctly, that's when you start building up this plaque.
Got it.
In the arteries.
Okay.
So then you're not feeding blood,
yeah,
to the rest of your body. And you need blood because blood is going to carry all the oxygen and nutrients and all your growth factors and stem cells so that you can keep the tissue and the organs alive and healthy. So it makes sense to me.
Sure.
Okay, well, if we're going to have plaque and inflammation built up, then you're not going to get blood flow to the penis and you're not going to feed the tissue and the tissue is going to start to die. And that's really what I get to see. I see things that I feel like, I'm not sure if I ever really wanted to see this much, but I do.
Okay.
And it's so fascinating to me that as we age, both men and women, the tissue begins to die everywhere, yeah, right?
Well, you see that when you look at people that are aging, that's obvious.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if it's happening in the brain, you're getting atrophy of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting atrophy of your muscles, right, as people get older. Why aren't you getting atrophy of the other parts of you?
Sure.
And you are.
Most people just don't see that.
Exactly.
Thankfully, we don't see that.
Exactly. So that's the first part. Second part, obviously, is hormones. We do need hormones. To me, it's like a sports car, mm-hmm, right? So if you have a sports car, you're going to make sure that you put the best gas in and the best oil in because you want this sports car to run at the best of its ability.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to put sugar as the gas. So why would you do that for your body? To me, our hormones are a chemical makeup that kind of lubricates our whole body and makes the system work. And again, as we age, we stop producing that. And then the last is our brain.
Right.
Brain is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of messes with us sometimes.
And I think that they're probably related, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're having issues with intimacy, that's going to affect you psychologically. And it probably becomes just a self-fulfilling prophecy, like a cycle.
It is a cycle. It's like this rat race that they get into. And that's my biggest thing is like, you got to get out of that. Your mind will go back to the way it needs to, but it's a little bit of PTSD, believe it or not. It's like if it doesn't work this one time, now you're constantly thinking that this is going to happen again and again. And you got to stop that or just snowballs.
Continues.
Yeah.
So now this treatment that you do, and you have a device that you created and sell related to this called the Phoenix. How effective is it?
So what's interesting is once we started bringing shockwave into the clinic, what we noticed is that for every 10 people that called for treatment, only one would actually come into the office. And that's because it's expensive. It can cost $500 to $600 just depending on where you live to get one treatment. And it's not one treatment. You might need four, five, six. It just depends on the level of severity that you have. And so then it's 30 minutes. So these guys have to drive. They have to find someone who does it for them. It's not covered by insurance. And then they have to take off their pants and they feel ashamed. They don't want to do that.
Sure.
So again, my ex-husband at the time said, if we could invent a home use device, like it, Novus isn't just helping these men. We could be helping men worldwide. Think millions. Of the men's, the millions, yeah.
billions
that we could help. And I'm not an inventor. And so I thought, well, that's a great idea. I just don't know where to even start with that. And he started talking about it with every patient that was walking in the door. And next thing, a patient walks in the door who actually was an inventor. And Dustin told him the story.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And he said, today's your lucky day. I'm an inventor. And he went out to his car. He brought a book back that was called Inventing Success. And he said, I want you to read this. I'll be back in 3 weeks with our very first prototype.
Wow.
And he came back 3 weeks later with the very first prototype. And he set it on my desk.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. And it worked?
Yeah. Well, it was a little Frankenstein. Okay. Yeah. I do still have it at home. Okay. Very loud. It was very loud. But it took us about 2 years of prototypes. So we went through 20 different prototypes to get it to where it's at now. And what we did was, believe it or not, this is even crazier, but we would call up the guys who couldn't come in because they couldn't afford it. It was too far, whatever the case may be. And we said, hey, we're developing a home use device. Would you want to be part of our clinical study as we're going through the prototype? And they signed up. And not only did they sign up, they showed up. It was incredible. What are these guys doing?
Were you giving it away?
No, we were doing the treatments in the office.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And sometimes the machines, they were the prototypes. So sometimes they would break down halfway through the treatment. We're like, sorry, we got to go fix it. So we'll see you next week.
Okay.
But they were fine with that. And so we got it to the point to where it's at, where it is today.
And today, how effective is it?
Yeah, today we're in the last stages of FDA clearance.
Okay.
And so it's pretty close to the predicate. We're just tweaking the tip just a little bit to kind of get to the last stages of it, but it works. And
that's
it
awesome.
Works pretty good.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And I hope that ultimately succeeds incredibly for you, because that sounds like just a tremendous opportunity to offer that to the whole world.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I guess when I look back at being 8 years old, I always wanted to help people and I never knew it was going to be in this fashion.
Sure.
But
I'm sure you would have never thought that at 8 years old, hopefully.
I know. But here I am.
Here you are.
And I feel fulfilled by doing it. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Let's talk about hormones, because you mentioned that, and I know that it's one of those things that just diminishes as we age. And so men have a decline in testosterone. For women, it's estrogen predominantly. But what is the impact of this? And with hormone therapy, what can you accomplish?
Yeah. So what most men don't realize is that you guys go through menopause just like we go through menopause.
Didn't know that.
I know. Nobody talks about that.
I wonder if I'm postmenopausal.
Sure. Yeah, so the average age.
That would explain my hot flashes.
That's true. You guys have the same symptoms that we have. You have the night sweats, the hot flashes, you're moody, you might have migraine headaches, you have this bloat around your tummy, you're not building muscle the way you used to. For you guys, it's the libido. I always talk about your erections. If you're not having daily morning erections, meaning like you wake up in the morning with an erection, your hormones are starting to decline.
Okay.
So, you know, the way I try to explain it to men is think about it like this. We're born with so many ovaries that release these follicles or these eggs, which is we're really meant as creatures to procreate.
Right. Exactly.
Like that's our job.
That's our job.
Let's just be real.
Yeah.
And so we have hormones that are supposed to be basically cultivating and building this life. And so as we start to age, we're losing these follicles or these eggs or these ability to create life, which means that our hormones are starting to decline because there's nothing for them to hold on to. There's nothing for them to create.
And isn't it true? I heard that female humans are the only female species that actually has life expectancy after childbearing age.
Yes. Well, I was actually reading this book a couple months ago. And I was fascinated by this. So in the 1900s, only 5% of women lived over the age of 50 years old.
5%?
5%.
Amazing.
In the 1900s. So you think about it for just a second. And most women during that time period would have babies when they started menstruating, right?
Sure.
12, 13, teens, 14, yep. teens.
Yeah.
And then they would childbear in their whole teens and 20s. They'd have all these kids. Yeah. And then the average age of menopause is 52 years old, plus or minus 5 years.
Okay.
And that's when these women died.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So really, menopause was like your death wish.
Sure.
That's kind of the body saying like, we're done.
We're done.
We're going to check out. Yep. Right? But modern medicine is really keeping us alive until we're 80, 90. I have lots of patients in their hundreds.
You have lots of patients in their hundreds.
Yes. The hundreds club is what I call
that's
them.
Awesome.
So my whole thing is, well, great. We're now living 50 years in this dead body.
Yeah.
Technically. And, you know, what women and men will start to experience is this excruciating joint pain or bone pain. And they'll say, yeah, I went to my doctor. He said it's osteoarthritis or I have rheumatoid arthritis or some kind of arthritis because of all this pain. And honestly, it's the hormones.
Really?
Because your hormones are declining. That's what lubricated everything.
But the doctors don't bring that up typically,
no.
Right?
No. We had 1 hour of hormone class during school.
Wow.
So like, I can't remember that.
Yeah.
So you think of all the things that they have to remember. And I'll have patients say to me, well, I'm just going to go to my endocrinologist and I'll have them check my hormones. Endocrinologists usually deal with thyroid and diabetes because that's what is prevalent. Like that's what most people are going to see them for.
Okay.
So they're not really
it's not the focus.
Doing hormones.
Yeah.
Or some women will say, I go to my OBGYN and oh, a lot of OBGYNs deliver babies. So like they're busy doing baby stuff.
Right.
So
it's amazing. Yeah. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
You're saying that it really comes down to hormones. So how do you dial that in? How do you determine like what the right, I don't know, mixture is or right hormone levels mm-hmm. for each individual is? And then what can you accomplish with that if you dial it in right?
Yeah. So I did this little video and I was like, wouldn't it be amazing if young women and men got their hormones checked when they felt their best? Like, what is that? Is that when you're 25? Is that 30? Is it 35? I don't know. We're not a one size fits all. Everybody's different.
And what I'm hearing too is actually teens are already starting to experience hormone level declines.
Yes.
It's crazy.
I can't tell you how many men that I see 18, 19, 20, where their testosterone isn't where it should be for an 18, 19, 20 year old.
Amazing.
And so it really kind of makes you wonder about our diet, environmental. We're not getting the exercise that we used to, and muscles really help create hormones. So I just feel like we're at this, I call it a disadvantage, but it's not. It's education.
Okay.
I feel like people need to be educated that the doctors are doing the best that they can. And modern medicine is great for what it does, but you got to clean your side of the street too.
Okay.
Like, they're not going to come home with you and feed you and make sure you get out of bed to exercise. Like, that's your job.
It seems to me like modern medicine today is really good for addressing the critical life-threatening issues when they occur.
Correct.
But not trying to help avoid these issues from developing way before we see those obvious signs.
Right. And I wonder, too, I never want to put blame on the medical system, but is it because they're so inundated that they're just so busy taking care and reacting quickly to all these people with diseases that it's like, I don't have time to deal with proactive healthcare because we have so many sick people.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that most doctors have the best of intentions and I think that they're extraordinary people in most cases, but they're busy.
And
they have their own lives. And then also, I can tell you from an experience that my wife had where she utilized this treatment to try to help avoid having her gallbladder removed. Mm. And the surgeon had her scheduled for surgery. And she said, you know what? I was recommended to do this gallbladder and liver flush that this other doctor recommended. He's a naturopath, but would you allow me to try this for just a week and see what happens? And she did. And then she went to get a CAT scan. And a couple weeks later, the doctor called her finally and said, I'm so sorry, Jennifer, it's taken me so long to get back to you, but I couldn't believe the results. I had to actually confer with a few of my other colleagues. And this guy is a renowned organ transplant surgeon. And he says to her, we're not taking out your gallbladder because that polyp or whatever it was, the tumor, the gallstone has reduced in size by more than half. since we last had you.
In one week.
And he said, it's astonishing. We're just going to monitor you every year. But by the way, what was that protocol? Now, you can't send an email to my work email, but I want to do that personally, so you got to let me know. And I think that they want to harness the best technology that is available today, but we're just not provided with the tools in the traditional educational system and in the institutions that these people are working in, and that creates this disadvantage, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. That's why I really wish people would realize that you got to look out for yourself too. You got to kind of do your own research, and you got to take care of yourself. You have to eat well. You have to exercise. You have to get sleep, because this is your body and nobody cares about your body but you.
Yeah, that's true. So you got to be your own best advocate.
Yep.
I want to take you back to hormones. So let's say you are 70 years old and you've been able to help this patient optimize their hormone level. 70-year-old male, what could they potentially be experiencing in terms of overall wellness and health if it's dialed in right?
Oh my goodness. I call it the Eeyore syndrome.
Yeah.
So I have these men come into the office and they literally look like, do you remember Eeyore?
Sure. From Winnie the Pooh. Yeah.
They look like Eeyore. Their skin looks like Eeyore.
Okay. It's just
they're
hanging
like,
up.
They're gray and they're ash and they have no self-esteem and their voice, you can't hear them because they just don't have the authority.
Yeah.
And they sit down and they feel defeated. And they're either going through a divorce or they've lost their wife or they lost their job or whatever the case may be. And then you start working with them. You get them on a diet and exercise program. You get them sleeping. You get their hormones in check. And they're starting to do the whole program. And it usually, honestly, I'll have some patients who will call me within 2 weeks and they'll say, wow, I just had this black cloud completely lifted.
Amazing.
Yeah. But I'll usually see it within 3 months. It takes a good 3 months. And that same person walks to that door and their shoulders are back and they're talking loud and proud and they finally have self-esteem and they've got some muscle on them and they're just kind of like, you're a cool cat.
Yeah.
You know, like,
it's so great.
Oh my gosh, I get to know you. It's amazing. Yeah. So. Oh.
That's astonishing.
It's fun.
Yeah, awesome. let's talk about some of the other things that you're doing in other modalities of treatment, you know, in ways that you are helping people repair tissue, as an example. Like, my wife is actually currently seeing you now as a result of she tore a meniscus a couple years ago, had surgery to repair that. Surgery fixed it, it healed, and then it re-tore again. And she went to go see a doctor who's a sports medicine doctor, anti-surgery, who said, Jen, you are on the path to need a knee replacement. That's coming soon unless you get some stem cell therapy or something else that is along the same lines. It's going to help regenerate this tissue in your knee. And she's been seeing you for a while, and apparently it's working quite well.
Yeah.
So talk about some of the things that you do in that regard.
Yeah, so it's not all sexual wellness.
No, I know.
As much as it's fun. Yeah. But I also use the shockwave therapy for musculoskeletal injuries because, believe it or not, going back to the lithotripsy days in the 1960s, when they found that it actually allowed for regeneration of the tissue, it was about, I want to say it was the 1970s, 1980s is when they started using it for musculoskeletal injuries. So knee pain, shoulder pain, hip pain, plantar fasciitis, Achilles tendonitis. And I actually had this gentleman come from, I think it was, gosh, it was somewhere in Europe. This is a couple of years ago. And he said, oh yeah, there's shockwave therapy clinics like everywhere in Europe. Mm. I can just go anywhere to get my plantar fasciitis treated.
Wow.
And he's like, I had such a hard time finding somebody. And then I found you. And he's like, why is the United States so far behind? Like, why can't I find these clinics?
Now, was he an American? Or
no.
He came from Europe and he found you?
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yes. He was on vacation and his plantar fasciitis was flaring up from all his walking. And so he found us. So it is known. It's just, it's not as popular yet. And hopefully it does get popular.
Sure. Yeah. But I'd never heard about it before Jen came to see you and she told me that you were doing this.
Yeah. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So we'll usually use the shockwave therapy. And I kind of think of it as farming. When you're a farmer, you want to plow your soil first before you plant the seed and then you water it. And I feel like that's what shockwave therapy does, is it kind of prepares that tissue for injections of PRP and exosome stem cell therapy. Now, we do both. We have PRP for patients who maybe they don't want to do stem cells.
For anybody that doesn't know what PRP is, explain that whole process.
So PRP is platelet-rich plasma, and that's just your own blood.
Right.
So we're drawing your own blood, and we're spinning it in a centrifuge, and it's going to separate your red blood cells from your platelets.
Okay.
And the platelet part of it is what carries your own stem cells, your own growth factors, your own healing properties. But sometimes what I'll say to patients is, look, for me, for instance, I feel like I'm pretty healthy. I eat well, I sleep, I take care of my hormones. So my PRP is probably pretty good.
Yeah.
But somebody who's maybe like 70, 75 on medications, diabetes, high blood pressure, like I'm not real sure.
The quality's not that good.
It's not that good. So what do you want from it? It's not helping you now. So for them, I always say, well, stem cells is the next best thing. And I think about it like a baby for a second.
Yeah.
So if you were to fall and you scrape your knee, how long does it take until that scrape is healed completely, where there's nothing happened? It's not pink anymore. It's completely fresh.
Probably a few weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe longer than a month, actually. Yeah.
Exactly. Now think about somebody who's diabetic. It might take them four months, right?
Yeah.
Now think about a baby. If a baby falls, how fast does that heal?
Days.
Right? Yeah. So that's what the quality of their stem cells are compared to mine or yours or the 70-year-old. So really, it just kind of, you know, how quickly or how much do you actually want this tissue to heal? And so we have patients who really fly in from all over the country to see us for using stem cells. And we'll do knee injections, shoulder injections. We put them in the penis. We put them in the G-spot.
Okay.
We'll use them for vampire facials. You know, it just kind of depends on where this tissue is wanting to be regenerated.
That's amazing. And there's been a lot of talk about stem cells. And there was a book that came out, I think about a year ago, Tony Robbins' book, Life Force, which delved into all the stuff that we're talking about. And I remember reading, like, if you wanted to get good quality stem cells, you couldn't get them here in the U.S. You had to go out of the country to, like, Panama or Costa Rica. So what's the deal with that?
Yeah.
Talk about the quality issue and what distinguishes, is it good quality? And how do you go about getting the right sort of stem cells if you need that? Like, obviously, somebody can come to you, but how do we know what the quality is and what's necessary?
Yeah, it's tough because I just got an email, actually. I've been using the same stem cells for the last probably 6 years.
Okay.
And he opened up his practice. Well, he's based out of Florida.
Okay.
He being Duncan Ross. So Duncan Ross is the PhD that I get my stem cells from. His lab is called Chimera Labs.
Okay.
And he is always sending out letters about, like, copycat companies that are, you know, maybe there were reps that used to work for him or whatever. But so it is difficult to know, like, what is good and what's not good. I know that with the whole Panama thing, you have to be careful with the way that you advertise stem cells in the United States because it's not approved. It's not FDA approved.
Not FDA approved, yeah.
Nope. And you can't say that it treats anything because it doesn't. It's not FDA approved to treat anything.
Yeah.
Just like my shockwave therapy.
Yes.
Is not approved to treat erectile dysfunction.
Not yet.
Correct.
Yeah.
So you can't advertise.
Okay.
So if you can't advertise it, how do you make people aware of what you're doing,
gotcha.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, to me, that's always the number one thing of why people go out of the country is because they don't know it exists in the country because you can't advertise. So, like, how do they even know where to go for
sense,
this stuff?
Yeah.
With the Chimera Labs, you know, that we use with this doctor, he used to actually harvest bone marrow stem cells. And his story is that his dad was actually dying and he helped him with his own bone marrow stem cells to see if that would help save his life. And it didn't. And so he kind of felt like, you know, defeated a little bit that he couldn't save him.
Yeah.
And so he started working in this lab where he was trying to figure out how to make these stem cells better. And what he realized is that the stem cells always secrete a juice, which is what he calls like an olive oil or a baby oil, something like that. And he thought, well, why does it secrete this juice? Like, what does this juice do? And he started accumulating. He's like, I'm going to study the juice. So he started saving all the juice in his freezer at home. And he had a party at his house. Okay. And there was this bonfire that was going on. And one of his friends actually fell into it. Into the bonfire.
Oh, the bonfire.
Yeah. Got a third degree burn on his face.
Yeah.
And had to rush him to the hospital. And when they went to the hospital, they were like, okay, they have to put
skin grafts.
They're going to do PRP. And they're going to do all this stuff. And he goes, I have some olive oil, baby juice.
Okay. Yeah.
At home. I would like to bring and put on him because it comes from stem cells. Uh-huh. And I don't know how he got away with this, but the doctor's like, that's fine. And the patient said that was fine too. So he started using the juice. And within 7 days, the face was completely a brand new face. Like,
wow.
Completely brand new skin. It was incredible. So he knew he had something with the baby juice. And that's where he learned that exosomes actually are secreted from stem cells. And that's actually what the juice was.
Wow.
So exosomes aren't stem cells.
Okay.
They're a product of stem cells. So for people who say, like, I don't want to have stem cells because I don't want someone else's DNA, which if you are kissing anyone, you do know you get their DNA.
Really?
Yeah. But anyways, I digress.
Yeah.
But stem cells have both DNA and then messenger RNA, microRNA in it, whereas exosomes only carry the messenger. It's only the proteins.
Oh, so it's stripped of the DNA.
Correct. Okay,
gotcha.
Yep. So then that kind of takes care of all that, you know, scariness of what people
are thinking.
What
about the source of the stem cells themselves from which you're deriving the exosomes? Yeah. Because you were talking about... Again, remind me the
Oh, Chimera Labs.
Yes, and the source that they use.
Yep, he gets it through a donated placenta.
Placenta, yeah.
Yep.
Because I remember hearing, I think in fact it was in Tony Robbins' book, that actually placenta-derived stem cells was the best quality, was the best source. Because it is the source of life, essentially, right?
Yes, that's what's building the baby.
But in other cases, you're getting umbilical cord stem cells or taken from other sources, but that's not as effective, not as potent, right?
Right. And we did start with that. When we first started Novus, we tried like the amniotic stem cells and we did the Wharton's jelly stem cells. And we just didn't really see the results the way that we do with the exosomes, believe it or not.
So that's amazing.
I'm more of a fan of the exosomes.
So what kinds of things can you treat effectively using the stem cell exosomes?
Well, if I wasn't making any claims.
Yeah. Hypothetically.
And if I was just giving you what I see in my clinic, I've had patients who had Lyme's disease. I've treated patients who have gastroparesis. I have patients who have other autoimmune disease, Peyronie's.
Yeah.
The sky's kind of the limit, to be honest with you.
And I'm sure these are people that have already run the gamut of trying to look at anything from a traditional medicine standpoint.
Oh, yeah.
And they're hitting a wall and nothing's helping.
Oh, yeah. They've been through everything.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, my gastroparesis gentleman, he had a pain pump placed inside of his stomach to help with his pain.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Was that morphine?
It was a morphine drip.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
So we talked about stem cells. What about peptides? I mean, that's another big, huge area that's just taken off these days.
Yeah.
Talk about that and what you can hypothetically treat with peptides.
Peptides are amazing. And what I'll tell patients is we naturally make peptides. We make over 300,000 peptides. And peptides are just a string of amino acids.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay.
Half our amino acids we make naturally. The other half we get through our diet.
Okay.
So as we age, what we're making kind of declines in its quality.
Lessening,
And then our diet also declines in quality. So we're just not getting what we need to actually make the peptides. And the peptides are just cell-to-cell communicators. So it's basically telling a cell, hey, cell, I need you to repair that bone.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, cell, I need you to make collagen. Hey, cell, I need you to secrete testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to secrete growth hormone. So it's just telling the cell what to do. So as we age, just like hormones, if the signal is gone or weak, it's no longer telling the cell what to do. And the cell's like, I don't know what to do. Can somebody tell me? So then you start aging, right? Nothing's repairing. So the idea behind peptides is, well, if you can start actually telling the cell what to do again, can it start to repair itself and regenerate? Yes. So going back to your wife and her gallbladder, our bodies are amazing. We can actually repair and regenerate. We just don't realize the extent that it can repair and regenerate. So if you just give it the right tools, the right hormones, you can kind of turn back that clock. You just have to give it time and give it the right environment.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So many people these days are taking, as I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, these pharmaceuticals, Mounjaro and Ozempic, and they're losing weight effectively. People are going from obese to normal weight or even thin. But I worry about, like, what are the long-term implications of that? Are they, first of all, are they peptides, number one? And number two, what's actually taking place from a chemical reaction standpoint with those? And what are the long-term risks, if you're aware of those, if any?
Yeah, I mean, so I have a love-hate relationship with it. The reason why I have a love-hate is because when you start saying the brand names, right, the Mounjaros, the Wegovys, the
Ozempics,
right? What happens is when they're actually branded a name, they become a pharmaceutical. Right. So in my mind, it's a synthetic pharmaceutical medication. In order to make a synthetic pharmaceutical medication, yes, you are taking some of the peptide, but you also put some kind of other fillers in it, which we don't really know what else is in it. And they kind of create it as like a one-stop shop, meaning like everybody's a one-size-fits-all.
Right.
And we're not. So what I find is that when patients are given these medications, they're losing drastic weight, and that's because they're throwing up all the time. They're sick. It's too high of a dose. Uh-huh. So if it's too high of a dose, they can't cut it back.
Yeah.
And they're going to have these side effects. So I had this gentleman who actually had to go in and have his flap repaired on his stomach because he couldn't stop throwing up.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it, because he was taking that. It's like, okay, well, his diabetes is controlled and he's lost 30 pounds, but now he's got to go through surgery. Like, that doesn't sound right. That sounds terrible. So to me, they're good if they're done in a correct way, in a slow way. So I always tell patients, 1 pound a week is true weight loss. Like, that's weight loss that your body can handle. That's what you can handle. Yeah. That's healthy.
Yeah.
That's not like ripping from your bones, ripping from your muscle. This stuff, if you're losing and dropping weight that fast, it's not that good for your muscle. It's not that good for your brain. It's not that good for your body. So my love hate.
Okay. So what you use in your practice for treating weight loss, are you, you're using peptides?
I am using peptides.
Okay.
Yep.
You're just optimizing it for each individual patient.
Yes.
Is there anything else that you guys treat at Novus that we haven't covered?
We did just get a new machine called the Morpheus 8. And the Morpheus 8 uses radio frequency with microneedling.
Okay.
So radio frequency is just heat. So think of if I were to hold a flame and I put a piece of plastic on top of it, that plastic shrivels, right?
Yeah.
That's basically what radio frequency does to the collagen in our skin. It basically tightens it back up. So again, if you're regenerating or repairing tissue, you're creating new arteries, veins, and nerves, new blood flow so that that tissue is nice and healthy again. And then with the microneedling, we're creating some microtrauma, and then we put exosomes on top of it. So then we're kind of giving you the double whammy of new collagen.
Okay, so you're using, in this case, this is for skin treatment.
This is
for anti-aging, reducing wrinkles.
Yep.
What else?
Skin tightening, pore shrinkage. Yeah. We have some patients who have like acne scarring, but we also do like their tummy. We have a lady who has cellulite and we're working on the back of her thighs. We have a lady who's lost a bunch of weight. So she kind of has those like the saggy
skin,
arms.
Yeah.
So we're working on her arms. So it's not just face, but...
And these are alternatives, really, I would assume, to cutting off the skin.
Yes.
You know, to facelifts or removal of that excess skin.
Yes. In fact, I'll say this. So we had this woman come in. She's in her 70s. I think she's like 75, 77. She flew in from Florida. And I remember when I saw her, I was kind of like, I think she might need a facelift. Like, I don't think we can do this. And she's like, no, honey, I'm not going in for a facelift. We're going to do this.
Okay.
And so she ended up going through, I believe she went through 4 treatments because it's technically 3 to 4 treatments every 4 to 6 weeks. So she ended up going through all 4 treatments and we did the exosomes on top, right?
Yep.
Her photos are incredible. Like her jawline, the way that her nasolabial folds, her forehead, she literally looks like she's 55.
Oh my God. So you took out like 15 or 20 years off her without any surgery.
Yes. And I was like, you know what? How dare me tell her? Yeah. that she needed a facelift. So
well, that could
it's
be good for
awesome.
Business for you that, yeah. that you could have that big of an impact with this new device.
Yeah, it's
pretty
awesome.
You're adding the exosomes on top of it, which I think is a big twist.
I do too. And all these patients that walk through my door, everybody gets a complementary hormone consultation. So okay. then these, because my thing is this, you're coming in, you're spending all this money fixing your face or fixing the penis, but what about the internal side of you? Like, let's make sure your hormones are optimized. Let's get you on peptides. Like, let's make the whole machine working right, because then it's going to last longer and you're going to be happy with the results.
Good stuff. So let me ask you, what would you say are like your favorite tips that you would give to any patient about like, what can you be doing that you might not be thinking about already to just be putting yourself in the best position for health overall?
The easiest thing I always tell patients, and I'm always shocked that most people don't know, intermittent fasting.
Really?
Yes. Intermittent fasting. Just if you had to do one thing, if I could give you one piece of advice, I would say intermittent fasting.
Okay, so intermittent fasting, are you talking about like eating during like an 8-hour period and fasting for 16, the 16-8 method?
Yep.
Yeah.
And when I start talking about it with patients, I get this look like, oh my, I'm going to be starving. Yeah. And I'll say to them, just start with 12. Start with 12 hours. That's easy. Most people do 12 hours, 7 to 7, right? Sure. You stop eating at 7, you can't eat till 7. I go and do that for a week, then add an extra hour. Now go 7 to 8. Mm-hmm. Wait a week. Go 7 to 9. Add an hour until you get to the 16. And it's so much easier if you do it that way, and that makes more sense to people.
I've done it myself, and it's not that challenging. You just get used to it.
Yes.
But let me ask you a question. So I'm trying to now build muscle. I actually lost like 20 pounds over the last couple months, and now my issue is like adding muscle, and I'm 53 years of age, so it's not as easy as it used to be. So my question is, if I'm intermittent fasting, am I missing out on getting enough protein as a result of that?
Well, you need to make sure that you're having that protein within that window.
Within that window of time.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Cool.
And that you're lifting the good weights that are building more testosterone for you, the bigger muscles that you have. So your butts, squats, deadlifts, lunges, thighs, chest, the big muscles are going to produce more testosterone for you.
That's
and
really
testosterone's what building muscle.
And I think another interesting thing too that I learned about in the last year or so is that we think that cardio. Like if you do more cardio, you're going to lose more weight. But I've heard that that's really not so true, especially the older you are, that you want to be doing more weights and actually heavier weights.
Yes.
Maybe resulting in less repetitions, but heavier weights is better than doing a bunch of cardio. Is
yes,
that true?
That's true. Wow. Because as our hormones decline, our muscles begin to atrophy. We can't build muscle the way we used to. And muscle's what protects our bones. So if we have nothing protecting our bones, that's when we start having that hunchback and you get all your injuries that you have. So you want to build that muscle. The more muscle you build, the more fat you burn. So you really don't want to do the cardio stuff as you get older.
Interesting. This is great.
I mean, I do want you doing cardio for your heart, but let's do it as weight training.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So now we are at the last segment of our session today, and this is what we call the extraordinary teaching segment.
Seeking the Extraordinary presents Extraordinary Teachings, a deeper look at the qualities that allow people to do extraordinary things.
So I'm going to ask you in rapid fire just a bunch of questions.
Okay.
And so tell me what just rolls off your tongue. What is the most satisfying accomplishment in your life so far?
My children.
Oh, that's wonderful. You have how many kids?
I have two.
Two kids.
Yes.
And they're how old?
My son is 26 and my daughter will be 22.
Fantastic.
And I couldn't have asked for the better kids than they are. Like, they're my best friends. They're great kids. They were never partiers. Yeah. I didn't have to worry about them. We travel together. We hang out together. We go to dinner together. They're awesome.
That's fantastic.
And they're like productive kids. They have jobs. They pay their bills. Like, they're nice people. They have nice friends, you know? And I know that in today's world, I don't know how people do it, but raising kids is very difficult. And I'm very thankful that I have awesome kids.
Wow, that's great. And any regrets?
None.
Awesome.
You know why?
Why?
Because everything has led me up to where I'm at today. And I wouldn't be who I am if I didn't have it.
So. You know, that's wonderful to have that perspective. And I know you've shared with me, you dealt with some challenges in your life growing up in adversity. And you turn that into the potential to create something great. And that's what you've obviously done. Yeah. As compared to just having that hold you back. And people can get easily bogged down with that stuff.
Yeah.
What single tip would you offer that has helped you be your extraordinary self?
Awareness. I wish people would just take a moment, look around, and become aware. Aware of your surroundings, aware of the people around you, aware of you. So many people want to be other people. They don't want to be them.
Oh, that's interesting.
And you are only you. There's only one of you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So why do you want to be anybody else? Be the best you.
The best you can be.
Yeah. There's so much that you're going to bring to this world. So just be you.
That's great. Do you have a personal mission?
Help as many people as possible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. This is my favorite one because it's near and dear to me. What is something that's on your bucket list?
Finish my book.
Okay. There you go. All right. And everybody, this is the extraordinary Stephanie Wolf. Thank you, Stephanie, for sharing this wonderful breadth of information with us in so many areas. And I think I'll end the show with a quote from Stephanie. She said, "We believe in healing the body from within and want our patients to take control of their own health, becoming proactive rather than reactive." You can learn more about Stephanie and the Novus Anti-Aging Center at her extraordinary quest at thenovuscenter.com. And you can also follow her on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. And I want to thank our sponsor, The Colony Group. The Colony Group is a national wealth and business management company with offices across the country that itself seeks the extraordinary as it pursues its unrelenting mission of providing our clients with peace of mind and empowering their visions of tomorrow. To learn more about The Colony Group and how we help manage our clients beyond money, visit thecolonygroup.com. And you can also follow The Colony Group on LinkedIn and at Twitter at The Colony Group. For Seeking the Extraordinary, I am Brad Levin. Thank you for taking the time to be with me today. You can follow me on LinkedIn and Twitter also at Brad A. Levin. To learn more about our ongoing search for the extraordinary, thank you again. We'll be back soon.